Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and hey, Nation, when you are getting out there and you want to get your information, what's going on, make sure you stop by chefdrmike.com and subscribe to the newsletter. It goes out before all our shows. You'll get all our recipes. You'll get all the great insights into what we're talking about with our absolutely fantastic, top of the line guest. And speaking of which, we've got one of my favorite guests on today, Chef Raghavan Iyer. Chef Iyer is a James Beard Award winner. He's an International Association of Culinary Professionals award-winning Teacher of the Year. He's an author. He's written 660 curries, Indian Cooking Unfolded, a number of other cookbooks. He's written, you might have read his works in Cooking Light, Fine Cooking, Weight Watchers Magazine, Well, and a host of others. And he's also the host of an Emmy Award-winning documentary called Asian Flavor. So if you haven't checked that out, you definitely want to. He was born in Mumbai. He is fluent in six languages, so that means he's way smarter than me. And so I'm going to be picking his brain, because hopefully he'll be able to speak my language as well, which is simple, simple, simple. We're delighted to have him here today. Calling in from Minneapolis, where he resides with his family. Chef, thank you so much for being on the program again.
Oh, Dr. Mike, what a pleasure to be with you. And I think having the doctor with your name certainly makes you intelligent, I think.
Oh, no. I wish that were so. But, my mother told me long ago, the more initials you have to you have after your name, probably, to put it in polite company, you know, the less qualified you are. And she was a woman of great, great wisdom. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today is something that I'm just incredibly passionate about, because for me, it's something that really spans the culinary world. It really gets into the health aspect in terms of our nutrition from food and the history too. It really, for me, gets into the history of food and sort of the roots of medicine and cooking from long ago when they, I think, were a little more tightly fused than they are today. And that's spices. And I know that's something that you're, you know, just a culinary wizard in. So to give our folks a little background, where did spices come from? You know, how did we, who picked a plant and said, man, this is going to, you know, go great with some some charred goat?
I know. I think we can certainly thank our ancestors for that. And I have a feeling a few of them died in the process. But if you think about, you know, one of the reasons why the entire world, I think, came to India, many, many, many years ago, was primarily for the spice trade. And so we certainly were the epicenter of spices. And if you think about, I think one of the most quintessential spices people take for granted in this day and age, and you look at black peppercorns, you know, and it's such a... Wow. A spice that has so much energy in it, and that's what really, I think, opened up the entire world for the spice trial. And so certainly a rich history in that perspective.
Well, you're certainly right. And you know, to put that in perspective, one of the things I don't think folks appreciate, and this was actually a fascinating bit of history for me. So when the barbarians were at the gates and they sacked Rome, and Rome had to pay a ransom, one of the things they asked for, along with gold and silver, was pepper. That's how valuable. And until, I think, sort of, I guess it was the 19th or 18th century, there was actually a town in England that would pay their tribute to the royalty or whatever in so many peppercorns, you know, per year. So you're right. It really, really shaped the world. How did India become such an epicenter of spices? Are they all native to India, or was there a culture of cultivation?
It was a combination of the two. I mean, you look at peppercorns, for instance, which is one of the main reasons why it goes back around 4000 BC. And, you know, like you aptly said, it was currency for many people, many cultures, and it was rightfully called black gold. But there were so many other spices that also were part of our culinary repertoire. And you look at, while I was researching the curries book years back, and had an opportunity to actually look at, you know, the influence of some of these spices, very complex spice blends that were in existence in India about 6,000 years ago. And so to see that sense of sophistication that comes out from, you know, from cultures that you would never imagine, you know, people, I think that's one of the reasons why India still continues to be such a strong player in the world of flavors.
Well, do you think, was it a combination of, hey, this stuff tastes really good? Was it a combination of food preservative? Was it a combination of you know, health benefits? You know, if you talk to Dr. Oz, you know, we should have cinnamon in everything, you know, because cinnamon is so good for us. It lowers our blood pressure. And certainly, you know, the spices, in even really the trace amounts that we use in the culinary world, are packed full of, you know, healthful benefits. What is the driver? You know, today with modern medicine, I think this has somewhat gone to the wayside, but I also see a bit of a resurgence as people are experimenting. They're enjoying, you know, you bring up curries that I want to talk about in just a little bit, but a lot of curries have turmeric, which has curcumin, and you know, there's that's an exploding field of health investigation. So, you know, what are the drivers do you see, and what then in particular drives you?
Oh, I think it's really pretty much all of the above that you just mentioned in terms of, you know, what it is that is so exciting about spices. And, you know, in many ways, we're living in a culture where what is old is new again. And so people are getting back to the concept of working with flavors, for instance, and lowering their amount of sodium that they're consuming, for instance, for their diets. Because they do tend to promote some amazing health benefits. You know, you mentioned turmeric. It was funny. There was an article not too long ago online, and it called turmeric actually quite, what was the word they used? Something that was, you know, so new and happening in the U.S. And I thought, well, that's been new and happening for thousands of years in India. So, you know, and one of the oldest branches of medicine in India is a branch called Ayurvedic medicine. It's a branch that relies on, you know, the knowledge of herbs and spices from a medicinal standpoint. And so there is really a lot of science affiliated with spices in Indian culture and cooking. And so I don't practice Ayurvedic cooking, but I think it's just the way we combine things and we combine spices together, I think, intrinsically brings out some of the health benefits. And, you know, as you know, nothing in isolation is healthful. I mean, you have to, you know, balance it out with other things. And I think that is so much the case with spices as well.
And we're talking a little bit about, you know, spice blends. And I think very often, particularly from this country, we tend to think of, you know, the flavor and spice profiles in very broad strokes, but within India there are very different regions and they have different sort of distinct flavors and I think use of certain spices and ingredients. Could you share that a little bit with us? Because I think it's something that most of the folks in the audience are unaware of. We kind of think of, you know, Indian cooking like we think of Chinese cooking, when there are so many regions that are very unique and rich and differ from one another.
That's very true. And I think, you know, especially when you look at the Western culture, you know, we tend to, in America in particular, you know, we like to sort of encapsulate, you know, all of these diverse cuisines with one little ingredient or one particular buzzword. And so I think it's a way of trying to understand. But I think with a cuisine like India, it is so diverse, and you go from region to region. And even though I broadly talk about north, south, east, and west, I feel like even within a particular region, you will find so much diversity in every state, for instance, of that particular region. But you think about the flavors, for instance, in the northern parts of India, flavors that were much more aromatic, reflective of, you know, some of the cultures that came from the Middle East. You think about saffron, you think about, aromatic spices like cinnamon and cloves, and of course, peppercorns from the south, bay leaves, things that are put together to give you warming effects. And it's also, you know, a landlocked area, so you don't have any tropical flavors into their diets. And so, but when you go to the south, I feel like, you know, southern India, the foods cannot be any more different. People look different, they eat different, they cook different, the ingredients that they use are very different, and so some of the flavors tend to be much more assertive in some ways. It's not as mellifluous as, you know, some of the spices we tend to use in the north, and so things like coconuts and chilies come into play with, well, which is interesting. You know, you think about how, you know, every country that came to India, either via the spice trade or by war, you know, they introduced to us so many other things as well. Chilies, for instance, was never part of our repertoire prior to the 16th century. And so you think about the Spanish and the Portuguese settlers, and they were the ones who introduced to us the world of chilies, along with, you know, potatoes and tomatoes. And so they really, in many ways, I thought, changed the culinary map of India. And so now peppers and coconut, for instance, you know, are very integral to the flavors of the South. But you think about flavors like mustard and, you know, lots of legumes and lentils and beans and peas that actually are quite integral to some of the styles of cooking in the South. And, and then, of course, when you think about the East and the West, you know, they take stuff from the northern parts and some from the southern and put together their combinations, which are also unique. And, you know, things like mustard, which is quite pervasive in the northern regions of India, you know, and every aspect of mustard is utilized. And the mustard oil is a prized delicacy that the eastern region of India, for instance, they will drizzle mustard oil the same way people would drizzle olive oil on a finished dish. And so the pungency of it. But I think all of that, you know, comes back to one word, which I constantly hammer about in the world of flavors, is the word balance. And oftentimes these spices are utilized to create a sense of balance in the particular dish. And I think that's very, very key to understanding the flavors of India.
And we're talking about that, and you bring up a really key point, which I think we all strive for, is that, you know, exciting burst of flavor, but something that's balanced. So, you know, when I think of some of the Asian flavors of Japan and so forth, I'm thinking, you know, sort of a salty blend with, you know, maybe a little bit of heat, or a salt and a sweet kind of blend. And so in Indian cuisine, is it that same sort, or are they balancing the heat? And then, although all these regions are very different, so this is a two-part question, are very different. Are there some, is there sort of an underlying theme that you would say, or sort of an underlying approach or practice that, you know, kind of binds it together? And if so, you know, what would that be, in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll start with your second part of your question. And I've always said, you know, in a nutshell, there isn't anything that underlines. There's nothing common in particular. I've always said India is a country, and also as a culture, and also particularly in cuisine, it's a country that defies definition. And so there's nothing, you know, that you could see that you feel that is common all throughout. And sure, there are some spices that you will find in different regions that are commonly used, but what makes it exciting, I believe, is the way they are used. And you know, I've always, I you know, so here's my 30-second elevator spiel in terms of flavors from a spice. I've always said a good Indian cook, or good any cook for that matter, if you give the person a whole spice, they should be able to extract 8 different and very distinct flavors from that particular spice. And, you know, for instance, if you use it, you know, we talked about, you know, you think about cumin seeds, for instance, which is, you know, pretty much pervasive, not only in India, but rest of the world as well. When it's used raw in the whole seed form, you get one flavor. When it's ground raw, you get a second flavor. When it's dry toasted in the seed form, you get flavor number three. If it's ground after it's been dry toasted, you get flavor number four. If it's sautéed in some kind of a fat left in the seed form, you get flavor number five. When it's sautéed and ground after it's been roasted in that oil, it's flavor number six. You soak it in some kind of a liquid used in the seed form, you get flavor number seven. And then when you grind it after it's been soaked in the liquid, you get flavor number eight. And so you think about that one very, it seems like a very simple concept. But you take that and you multiply that by hundreds of spices, you've sort of peeled back these layers of flavors that, to me, define Indian cooking. And you know, when you're painting the flavor palette of a particular meal in India, the spices really come into play in terms of giving you the tools to paint a very balanced picture. And and that's one of the reasons why, too, you know, when you go to India, oftentimes our meals are never served in courses. They are all, you know, served at the same time, you know. And you look at this platter, which is really, to me, the perfect definition of balance. You're balancing seven taste elements, you know, hot, sour, sweet, salty, bitter, astringent, and umami. And umami is that, you know, Japanese terminology, which is assigned to succulents that coat your tongue. And as you know, true umami is an essential amino acid, glutamate, and the most common form of which you find is monosodium glutamate. And so, but, you know, there are so many other spices that are used to sort of promote a particular taste element. And so you've got, having said that, not every dish in its isolation is designed to balance seven taste elements, but it'll balance at least two, if not more. And so, but a well-orchestrated, satiating meal should balance seven taste elements, but it should also balance an aromatic component. Because as you know, you hold your nose and you eat something, you can't taste a darn thing. And it's that role of opening up your nose, your 10,000 taste buds in your mouth is going to be able to process the world of flavors. And then, of course, you know, that balance also should reflect color, it should reflect texture, it should reflect temperature. And I think that's the hallmark of an exceptional meal, is how you can, if you can address all of these at that one meal, you're going to walk away with such a great satisfaction that I think is beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that was just an eloquent dissertation on really the artistic. It really was really just a great commentary on, you know, I think from a culinary perspective, what, you know, chefs strive to create, it becomes, you know, more than the food, it becomes an experience, because all of the things that you talked about are not, you know, sort of black and white scientific facts. I mean, we touched on these health benefits, and yeah, those are great to make you feel good. But it's all about that immersion. It's all about that experience. It's all about, you know, that uniquely human element of which you were really, I really love what you said about the spices. But I will tell you, you know, I had flashbacks to my organic chemistry days. I should say nightmares. And you know, because really what you covered were all the classes of like solvent extraction. So it's like, okay, well, and you're exactly right, though. It's like, well, you know, we're going to put it in a fat soluble and we're going to extract these sorts of flavors. And you really, as you said, cumin, for example, has all these things, but when it's, you know, cooked in a fat soluble base, it's going to extract some of those more fat soluble components. You're going to bring them to the forefront. Completely different than if you mix it with something that contains alcohol and you're doing an alcohol extraction, again, different than versus a, you know, water-based extraction, et cetera. So really just a lovely, lovely synopsis. And I want to expand on that a little bit and then kind of get your take into what I think a lot of people think about when they think about Indian cooking, which is curries, because I think, again, so often in the West, we sort of have this, I guess, sort of just a unidimensional view of it's a curry, and a lot of people think, oh, well, it's a curry and it's hot and it's spicy. Mm-hmm. But there's a world of curries out there with this world of spices mm-hmm. you're talking about. So could you share with us a little bit your thoughts on those?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, of course, having authored a book about 660 curries, I think I have...
Which people need to go out and get.
Which is, you briefly talked about, the world of chemistry and this nightmare. One of the one of my degree actually happens to be in chemistry, so I get what you're saying.
So you feel my pain. You feel my pain there.
I feel your pain. You said organic chemistry, and I had this chill run up my spine.
It does the same to all of us who are survivors.
That's true. But, you think about, and I think as a cooking teacher of 25 some years, I've always said, the best way I can empower somebody to look at, a complex world, especially like the world of curries. And I've said this is one of the most misunderstood concepts in the Western world. When you think about the word curry as it's spoken and spelt in the English language, it's a word that's not spoken in any of the 20 languages that are spoken in India. We have words that sound similar to that, words like kari, kadhi, tari, tadhi, and these are all words and languages that actually mean a dish that has a sauce or a gravy to it. It really, in a way, has nothing to do with spices or herbs or anything like that. Of course, spices do form the backbone of many of our curries, but in a very simplistic way, if a dish doesn't have a sauce or a gravy to it, to an Indian, it has nothing to do with curry. and so when you saw the English, when they came on board 400 some years ago, they fell in love with some of the sauces that they sampled in the Southeast and in the Northwest in particular. And then they had their cooks put together a cornucopia of spices that they ground up and bottled it into a jar and labeled it as curry powder. And they've done a remarkable job of marketing the concept of curry powder. But I've always said, curry powder as a concept is non-existent in any self-respecting Indian home kitchen, even in the 21st century. And so to us, in a nutshell, when it comes to Indian curries, especially curries from the subcontinent, I've always said associate the word sauce with it, and then your vocabulary starts to change. Over the years, people have always come to me and go, Raghavan, does this have curry in it? I don't like the smell of curry. I don't like the color of curry. And so what they forget to actually add the word is powder after that. Does it have curry powder in it? I don't like the smell of curry powder. I don't like the look of curry powder. And I've always said, I'm with you on that.
For somebody who's written a book, 660 curries, I bet you get a few strange looks when you say that to folks.
Yeah, it's the concept of curry powder. I've always said, I give full ownership of that concept to the English. But the idea of curries as an entity is very much Indian. So I've always said, curry is never added, it just is. Curry is not a flavor, it's an entity. And so I think because of that, you start to look at the world of curries. And so, in the introduction to the book, I teach you the building blocks. This is where I've always said I've jumped off the chemistry bandwagon. In the introduction to the book, I talk about flavor equals taste plus aroma. And that's where within that, equation, I talk about all of these things that you and I have been talking about. And so I think once you understand that, you understand the world of curries. And so to us, our complexity, in fact, there's some curries in India that have no herbs or no spices in it, for instance. And I'll give you an example. When you go to the northeastern part of India, in Assam, for instance, where they grow some of the world's best teas, they do a curry with green papaya in it. And it's a curry that, and I'll describe to you what's in it. So they take the green papaya and they cut it up into cubes or whatever shape you want it to, and they boil it in water with a touch of salt in there, of course. But there's no spices in there. There's no herbs. But what they end up doing is they go outside and they burn the leaves of the banana tree. And the ash from the leaf is used to flavor that curry.
Wow.
That's it. And so you think about that, almost that caustic, that acerbic quality that comes into it. But it's balanced, you know, with a little bit of a salt in there. It's balanced with the delicate flavors of papaya. And you all of a sudden you eat that. And, you know, sure, it's an acquired taste for many people because, you know, you never imagine it to be. But that, to an Assamese, is a curry. But to the rest of India, you serve something like that, and they will never have imagined that to be a curry. And so, you know, my point being that by virtue of being an Indian doesn't mean you're entitled to know all about Indian cooking from all regions. I mean, there are, you know, I've had impassioned conversations with many Indians, and, you know, some of them will accuse me of, you know, doing, or if I'm doing something, they'll say, well, my grandmother didn't do this, but I said, you know what, somebody else's grandmother did in some other region. So, and so it is one of those things where it's a country that continues to fascinate me and continues to surprise me after all of these years. And so, you know, when I even have, having authored 6 books, I feel like when I come back from India every time, I always come back learning something different each time. And that to me is not my expertise really, but it's the beauty of a country like India that, you know, continues to unravel itself every time you go there.
Well, I think that that's also the sign of a genius, which I think you are. You're just a culinary genius. I love your writings.
Thank you so much.
Taking the time to share this with us. Folks, you definitely want to pick up a couple of his books, 660 Curries, Indian Cooking Unfolded. You can follow Chef on Twitter at 660 Curries, or check him out on Facebook at Raghavan Iyer. Also, you can check out his website at raghavaniyer.com. Chef, I want to thank you once again for being here. Got to have you back. I didn't even get to get your favorite curry recipe. And to all of you out there, make sure you head over to chefdrmike.com so you can get the newsletter and get the detailed insights about what we're talking about. Until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.